Tonight, I'm going to talk about spiritual bypassing. And I think the first thing I'll say is that my understanding of enlightenment is saying yes to everything. It's kind of a grand yes to all of experience. And that would include a yes even to the things that are painful. And of course, that's a message that lands as a hard message for us because we're mammals. We have these exquisitely sensitive mammalian bodies and these exquisitely sensitive mammalian psyches. You know, I mean, all it takes is a rock in my shoe or something like that, and I feel it. I'm uncomfortable with it. You know, I have to do something about it. You know, all it takes is an unkind word or even a look, an eyebrow, you know, and it's enough that we emotionally feel it, you know. We are wired to feel things deeply. And unfortunately, what that means is that in many situations in life, especially in early childhood when we're very raw, we often get hurt by many things. Now, physical pain is kind of unavoidable, and it's, you know, when we are feeling physical pain, the body just feels it. It is very different with emotional pain. The body has the body mind has all kinds of ways of avoiding emotional pain. And in a way, this is a survival mechanism, because if we're hit with something incredibly painful, the loss of a loved one, or some kind of tremendous tragedy, it's so much pain all at once that it would be overwhelming to experience it all. And so the mind almost has these systems of avoiding it so that we can experience it little by little and integrate it. But unfortunately, what evolution was not foreseeing or not taking into account is that those kind of transitional places where I'm avoiding pain for the moment, I could also choose to live there and just keep on avoiding the pain, you know? And so there are thousands of ways that humans have of avoiding pain. Some of the more dysfunctional ones involve abusing substances, of course, getting addicted to alcohol, getting addicted to drugs, that sort of thing, as a way of avoiding pain. And of course, it's part of the classic mechanism of an addiction that when I'm in the addiction, I don't know that I'm addicted. You know, I'm using alcohol, maybe I'm getting complete rip-roaring drunk every day, but my story is, I don't have a problem. I have control over this. I could quit at any time, you know. And it's the, you know, it's a cliche, but it's deeply true that for anyone in that experience of being addicted, the first step is admitting they have a problem. The first step and the hardest step is admitting they have their problem. Because to admit that is to see through the mind's attempt to hide pain. And in many ways, that's our condition. Whenever we're in any kind of bypassing pain, that the hardest thing is to admit that we have a problem. The hardest thing is to see through the way that we're hiding the pain from ourselves. So addiction is one path. At another level, there's all kinds of, you know, without any chemical additives, there's all sorts of emotional dysfunctional patterns, you know, pure denial or walking around blaming other people in life or creating drama, you know, all sorts of things like this where people avoid their pain. And of course, someone who's in that sort of state, They know that they're doing better than the person addicted to crack, you know, so they're doing better at least than that. And those are very loud ways of avoiding pain. A lot of the loudness in the world is caused by people who are not dealing with their pain. A lot of the suffering in the world is caused by people who are not dealing with their own pain. You know, it's this this deep truism, hurt people. Then there are people who find out about things like Buddhism and start meditating and start reading spiritual books and that sort of thing. And that opens up a whole new way to hide from pain, you know? And boy, you can really feel great about yourself. You know, look at me, I know all this Buddhism and I can toss around all these terms. And I'm much better off than the person creating drama or the person addicted to heroin or that sort of thing. I can look down on them, and yet I'm still avoiding my own pain. And this is called spiritual bypassing. So spiritual bypassing is a term. It was created by, I think the man's name is John Wellwood. John Wellwood passed away a few years ago. And John Wellwood said, here's his definition. Using spiritual ideas and practices to sidestep personal, emotional, unfinished business, to shore up a shaky sense of self, or to belittle basic needs, feelings, and developmental tasks. You know, and so it's a wanting to skip ahead in a way, skip ahead to the end. I'm already close to enlightenment, that sort of thing. And not admitting my vulnerability, not admitting the places where I still have to do work, this sort of thing. Another writer said, I'll read this list. Here are some symptoms of spiritual bypassing, some signs of emotional bypassing. Not focusing on the here and now, living in a spiritual realm much of the time. Overemphasizing the positive and avoiding the negative. Being self-righteous about the concept of enlightenment. Being overly detached. Being overly idealistic. Having feelings of entitlement. Exhibiting frequent anger. Or alternately, you know, being completely devoid of anger, you know. Being overly compassionate. Pretending that everything is okay when it's not. And so these are all symptoms of spiritual bypassing. And it's tricky because, how to say it? I think it's very common when people start to learn about meditation or they start to learn about Buddhism, they start to explore these ideas. What often happens for people is that sometimes in a very short period of time, they have a number of realizations, a number of liberating kinds of realizations where they realize, oh my God, I've been doing X my whole life and that's been making me miserable and I don't need to do that anymore, you know? And so they have all these like kind of immediate sort of letting goes and breakthroughs and things they've been carrying that they can let go of. And so there's this sense at the beginning of life that this work is about making me comfortable and happy. And there is an aspect of spiritual life that is about putting me in touch with joy, making me, maybe not making me comfortable, but putting me in touch with ultimately equanimity. That's part of the story, but that's not the whole story of spirituality. And that really, the spiritual path, if it's one that we follow, and really this is true of any spiritual path, if it's one that you follow faithfully, sincerely, it will be shattering in some ways. It will bring you to your deepest fears. It will bring you to your deepest places of pain. It will bring you to all the things in life that you don't want to face. And that's just the nature of spirituality, because it's almost by its design, it's designed to put you in touch with and at peace with all things. And so at peace with all things means being at peace with all those things that you never really wanted to feel, you know? And I think one helpful way to think about spiritual bypassing is to think of it in terms of another very common form of bypassing known as white privilege. White privilege is a form of bypassing. You know, one of the defining features of white privilege is the right to be comfortable. I'm a white person. I want to be comfortable, you know. And so if a person of color comes to me and they start talking about race stuff and it makes me uncomfortable, then I can pull that card. Well, you're making me uncomfortable, you know. And this is known, of course, as white fragility, the card that white people play of, I don't want you to make me uncomfortable by making me, you know, face the things about race that I don't want to face, this sort of thing. And so it's useful to think about the parallel concept with spiritual bypassing, spiritual fragility, you know. Am I walking around saying, you know, well, I could be more spiritual if I didn't have to deal with that person. If I didn't have to deal with that issue, I could be more spiritual, you know. Are we making excuses for ourselves? Well, you know, I would be spiritual except for the fact that I have to deal with that, you know. Because, of course, true spirituality is about carrying that openness in all situations, you know. Having the, as it were, the zen of with all things. One very important way to get in touch with, well, there are a few good clues, you know, because of course it's very hard, the way the mind is designed, it's very hard for me to feel into what are the ways that I'm fooling myself, you know, what are the ways that I'm not being totally authentic with myself, you know. One good clue is anything that triggers me. Anything that drives me crazy, anything that really bothers me, whether it's something somebody says, something somebody does, something I read in the news, you know, if something really gets under my skin, then there's a thread there to follow. You know, like, why is it that that external thing got me so upset? What's the thread that that leads into, you know? Another very good source is feedback. Some of you know that for years I was a member of a spiritual group called COF. And one of COF's big ideas was as a spiritual person, I have to be asking for feedback all the time. I have to be open to feedback, you know, because if I'm walking around thinking I'm spiritual, but the people around me think I'm a jerk, then I'm not really spiritual, you know? Like, I have to be curious about the kind of impact that I'm having on others and be open to feedback about that. And of course, sometimes the richest feedback is the unsolicited feedback that we didn't want to hear, you know? And, you know, Koff would say over and over again, you know, on those occasions that you get unsolicited feedback, that's pure gold. Doesn't mean it's 100% true. I mean, sometimes somebody gives you incredibly, you know, potent, charged feedback, and it's more about them than it is about you. But, you know, what is the hook there that is actually about me and what that person said, you know? So in some ways, the antidote to spiritual unfolding is being willing to face our pain, being willing to face our fear. And I think it's tricky here. At this point, I'll say that a distinction I learned from a psychologist a few years ago I really liked. Some people are maximizers and some people are minimizers, just by almost by temperament. And so a maximizer, that's somebody, if you insult or you trigger a maximizer, there's an explosion of outward energy, whether it's anger or tears, you know, tremendous amount of energy comes up. And these people are always feeling tremendous amounts of energy. And often their experience of their own pain, they've experienced a lot of their pain, and they experience it as sort of being caught in a river and being swept down the river by this powerful current, you know, where they're almost drowning. And so that's one experience. Contrast that to the experience of the minimizer who's good at burying pain. You know, you can insult a minimizer, maybe they would not show anything. They'd have a poker face, but then they'd never talk to you again. Like that sort of thing, you know? And minimizers are often good at hiding the pain even from themselves. And so it's a very tricky thing when I talk about facing your pain. The advice is very different for maximizers or minimizers. For maximizers, it's all about, you know, how can you take baby steps toward it, where you can still hold the compassion and mindfulness and start to feel the edge of the pain. And then over time, build that container, being able to hold more and more with compassion and mindfulness. With the minimizer, it's almost more a matter, and I'll say I'm a minimizer, so I'm a little more familiar with this dynamic. It's almost like tracking an animal through the woods. Like the way you would track an animal through the woods, you're searching in the interior jungle for like, where's the pain hiding? Where is it? And like following these elusive threads to get to it, you know? And so it's a very different thing than the sort of immediate access that the maximizer has. The goal is to be able to hold a container for our pain, to hold a container of mindfulness, compassion, and equanimity for all our pain. And often it takes years of baby steps to make the container bigger and bigger and bigger. And of course, why is this important? Well, first of all, if I can hold a container for my own pain, that means I can hold a container for somebody else in pain, you know? And it's sometimes one of the hardest things as someone who's been through something truly traumatic is that no one can be with them. Like they've been through something traumatic and then they try and share and they blow other people out, you know, that sort of thing. It can be a very isolating experience. So really to be able to hold a container for other people in pain can be a tremendous compassionate thing. And also, I think I would say just from my own experience that all the places that hold the deepest pain, as they're integrated, as they heal, those are the places that feel the deepest joy, the deepest pleasure, the deepest love and compassion and connection. And so if I'm locked up with pain and there's a lot of places of pain that I'm not feeling, then I'm not even aware of all the flavors and all the subtleties of joy, of laughter, of sensuality that I'm not tasting in life because those places are still shut down, you know. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. So at the top, I have John Wellwood's definition. I have the signs of emotional bypassing. From the Chinese philosopher Mengzi, he's also known as Mencius. Mencius is one of my favorite writers from antiquity. Mencius was a Confucian scholar. He's considered kind of the number two guy in the Confucian tradition, you know, after Confucius himself, the second sage. He's the person who really added a heart quality to the entire Confucian tradition. There's really something quite wonderful about Mencius. But Mencius said quite simply, there's no greater delight than to be conscious of sincerity and of self-examination. Carl Jung tells us quite simply, what you resist persists. Joanna Macy says, as far as Buddhism is concerned, I find that Western Buddhists go for peace of mind, and that is such an inadequate response. Gus Van Sant says, sometimes getting upset with yourself is necessary when you face the truth. Dr. Diane Robb says, the foundation of spiritual bypassing is basically avoidance and repression. For some individuals, spirituality serves as a way to rise above or handle the shaky ground beneath. David White says, enlightenment is giving up of all hope of immunity. Mehmet Murad Aldin says, face the truth or the truth will face you. And of course, that's another part of it, that if there are places in me that I'm avoiding, one way or another, life is going to find a way to have me confront those in more and more dramatic ways if I keep avoiding it. Teal Swan says, spiritual bypassing is the act of using spiritual beliefs to avoid facing or healing one's painful feelings, unresolved wounds, or unmet needs. It is a state of avoidance. Because it is a state of avoidance, it is a state of resistance. I personally consider spiritual bypassing to be the shadow side of spirituality. Two from Robert August Masters. He says, when transcendence of our personal history takes precedence over intimacy with our personal history, spiritual bypassing is inevitable. Not to be intimate with our past, not to be deeply and thoroughly acquainted with our own conditioning and its original factors, keeps it undigested and unintegrated, and therefore very much present. And of course, it's also true that if I can't be intimate with myself, I'm going to have a lot of trouble being intimate with anyone else. Robert Augustus Masters also says, what spiritual bypassing would have us rise above is precisely what we need to enter, and enter deeply with as little self-numbing as possible. To this end, it is crucial that we see through whatever practices we have, spiritual or otherwise, that tranquilize rather than illuminate and awake us. Ingrid Clay says, spiritual bypass shields us from the truth. It disconnects us from our feelings and helps us to avoid the big picture. It is more about checking out than checking in, and the difference is so subtle that we usually don't even know that we're doing it. I found a few quotes from this character, Alethea Luna. She said, we tend to associate spirituality with transcendental and heightened states of being that are inevitably associated with feelings of happiness, joy, deep inner peace, and contentment. While all this is true and wonderful, many of us become intoxicated, distracted, and ensnared by these highly attractive images of spirituality, avoiding the darker, painful, and more exhausting sides of such a path. At its core, spiritual bypassing is like any other form of avoidance that rewards us with a false feeling of security and happiness while undermining our deeper path of self-growth and transformation. She also said, when spirituality is used as a defense mechanism to ward off the gremlins and demons of our existence, it actually becomes our greatest hindrance, preventing us from developing true courage, authenticity, and wholeness, the qualities that refine our soul. While the use of spirituality can provide us with a solid wall to hide behind, in doing so, it traps us in an all is happy and perfect jail cell of our illusions. And finally, she said, spirituality is not always pretty. In fact, oftentimes it is the most shattering, tumultuous, and testing experience we can go through in life. Reminds me of another quote I heard at one point. Religion is for people who believe in hell. Spirituality is for people who have been through hell, you know. Anthony St. Martin says, truth has a power only the courageous can handle. And he also said, one sincere truth from a stranger is more likely to move your life forward than anything your friends or family may tell you to spare your feelings.